General Motors' decision to shut 5 plants in North America and cut 14,000 jobs, sparking fury among workers, and the White House. The Trump administration making it clear Tuesday it feels blindsided and betrayed. An unhappy President Trump warning GM on Twitter, quote, "The U.S. saved General Motors, and this is the thanks we get. We are now looking at cutting all GM subsidies, including for electric cars."
This is the R1T pickup truck. It's all electric, and Rivian Automotive hopes it can disrupt the pickup truck market the way Tesla upended the luxury car market. CEO RJ Scaringe told Reuters the stripped-down version that can go 400 miles on a single charge will sell for less than $90,000. Rivian says these pickups will go on sale in 2020.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell sending out a signal Wednesday. The Fed is almost done raising rates for the time being. His speech before the Economic Club of New York setting off a buying spree on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials jumping more than 500 points. The phrase, quote, "just below," offering a big hint the Fed doesn't see interest rates going much further beyond the current target range of 2 to 2.25%.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's November the 29th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots to cover today on Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Doug Myers will be here from Associated Bank. We'll talk a little bit about wealth management. Some record numbers for building of wealth in the past year. And we'll talk to Doug about that coming up just shortly, a little bit later in the program. We'll ask the question, have advertisers gotten out of touch with their audience? The head of creative excellence at Ipsos will be here to talk a little bit about that. So good show. We'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, and traffic as well as we move forward in this hour. First on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the opening bell rings this morning on Wall Street after stocks posted the biggest gains, their big gains, yesterday after Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell appeared to signal fewer interest rates ahead in 2019 interest rate hikes. The Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed more than 600 points. The NASDAQ and S&P jumping more than 2% on the news. In his speech yesterday, Powell said, as you heard in the opening montage, that rates were close to neutral, and that sent markets soaring. The Dow gained 618 points at the close. The NASDAQ rose about 209 points, and the S&P added about 62 points, I should say. People who watch this very closely are still betting that there'll be a quarter point hike in December for interest rates, but there's a wide disparity between investors and the Fed on where rates should head in 2019, so we'll watch that. On the market desk this morning, we're seeing futures negative, though. Dow futures are off nearly a third this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are off a third and a half a percent, respectively. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all about a half a percent higher. And in Asia, markets are going to end the day in the green as well. Generally, the Nikkei up more than a half a percent, the Shanghai up more than a quarter percent. And oil is trading at $50.03 a barrel, which is down about 26 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. The pay gap between men and women what they make is worse than census data indicates. A new survey claims that women earn 49 cents compared to every dollar men earn. Economists had been estimating that women earned about 80% of what men earned, but that number is based on census data. The Institute for Women's Policy Research says the data does not account for part-time workers and those who take time off from work, which women do more than men. More than 4 out of 10 women step back from the workplace for at least a year, usually to take care of children. Women who leave the workforce for at least a year earn 39% less than women who remain in the workforce. Volkswagen is planning a new factory in North America to build electric vehicles for the U.S. market. The new CEO of Volkswagen's U.S. division made the announcement yesterday at a car show in Los Angeles and said they're still deciding on a location for the plant. He says the new plant will build an electric vehicle yet to be revealed under the Volkswagen brand, priced between $30,000 and $40,000, that would roll out in 2020. And Dunkin' is notifying people enrolled in its DD Perks loyalty program that their accounts have been compromised. One of the company's security vendors says an outside source might have obtained DD Perks members' usernames and passwords through breaches in other companies. Dunkin' says it learned of the issue October 31st. The statement says whoever obtained this data tried to use them to break into other online accounts across the internet, but the security vendor was able to stop them. Dunkin' is telling DD Perks users to create new passwords and launching an internal investigation. So as you get a donut this morning, create a new password along with that. We begin front and center this morning with Thought Leader Thursday. Doug Myers is here. He's the Senior Vice President and the Chicago Private Client Market Leader at Associated Bank. And Doug is back with us. Doug, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here. Good morning to you.
And happy holidays to you as
Thank
well.
Thank you, you as well.
It's the holiday season. I saw a statistic recently, $201.9 trillion last year, global personal wealth, according to Boston Consulting Group. It was a good year for a lot of folks.
It was, and it's interesting to see, you know, we're 10 years after the Great Recession, and it's amazing to see the amount of wealth that's been accumulated since the 10 years. And, you know, it was gloom and doom, and we weren't sure what was going to happen 10 years ago. And fast forward to now, and you look at what's happened in this country and in China, the wealth growth is just phenomenal. In fact, the U.S. now has 40% of the world's millionaires, which is four times the individual that China has with assets over $50 million, which is a very big number for an individual. But that number continues to grow, and the United States continues to grow in terms of its wealth, business, and assets.
I want to dive into a little bit of this, but first I'm going to get your sense of where the wealth is being generated. Is it people having a good time in the stock market? Is it business profits? Where's the wealth coming from?
You know, traditionally, and I think it still plays out in today's numbers, that the small business owners, when you sell a business and, you know, pass it on to the family, and then maybe the second or third generation ends up selling the company, that's been always the majority of how the wealth is accumulated in this country. And certainly the market has had a nice run in the past 10 years and hopefully will continue this year. Lately, it's been a little volatile. But if you look at historical levels, you know, your 20-year return in the stock market's about 9.8%, almost 10%, which is a good number. But I think the majority of wealth in this country has always been small business creation.
So as we look at all of this wealth, give us a sense of how this is impacting your business.
Well, it certainly impacts it in a very positive way. And we have, as a bank and as financial counselors, we have to certainly add value to our clients' relationships with the bank, and that goes in the form of financial planning. It goes in the form of asset management and investment management. And a lot of these wealthy families have family offices, and to add value to the offices, you have to provide services that make sense for them in terms of alternative investments, in terms of financial planning. I mean, they need help, and they need personal relationships with a bank in how they handle their wealth. And so it creates challenges, but it also creates opportunities for us to grow with them.
Let's talk a little bit about that. What are the challenges that are out there? And then we'll get into some of the opportunities as well, but let's start with
the challenges. I think the challenges are how to be relevant and continue to grow. And, you know, if you look at the investment world, there's a lot of new investments opportunities that come out. For example, alternative investments could include private equity, it could include real estate, it could include even investing in equity with closely held businesses like Uber and Airbnb are two examples that everybody has heard of. And a lot of private banks now are helping family offices invest in these private companies. And, you know, there's a continuing tech boom in the markets worldwide, not just the United States, but China and the UK and Canada is really growing in their tech world. And so I think this creates opportunities for families to invest in private companies.
And that's sort of, is that a new trend? I mean, is that Is there any, what's the history behind that?
It's fairly new. I think it's really grown in the past 10 years. I think private equity and private capital has really, you know, water seeks its own level. And I think as investors want to get out of the volatility of the market sometimes, they'll invest in certain private companies.
Has the money that people lost after 2008, have they made all of that back? And are people in better positions today?
They've made it back and then some.
And then some, yeah. And so they're kind of coasting forward. So that moves us to the opportunities. In addition to the private investments, what are some of the other opportunities?
Absolutely. And I wouldn't say coast because it's a rocky road.
Right.
As
maybe roller coaster is a better word.
That's a great word. And I think if you look at recent volatility, it's certainly people question where they can put their money in terms of a more stable growth opportunity. Absolutely.
Some of the rules have changed as well for the better?
Well, they have been for the better. And I think as the banks have continued to grow, the bigger banks have actually gotten bigger. Compliance has been an issue the past 10 years that we face. And compliance and risk management is everything in a bank. And, you know, we face a lot of issues. We've talked about cybersecurity and issues like that. And I think that the banks have continued to beef up their compliance and risk groups to manage this.
We have heard a lot about possible ways that this could come to a halt or slow down. Any of those on your radar screen right now? Anything that we should be worried about?
Well, they are. And I think when we look at all the headwinds right now, you've got escalating trade wars. You have the uncertainty around Brexit, which is Britain's exit from the global or from the European Union. You have rising nationalism and you have rising interest rates. And I think all those are headwinds. And I think that, you know, to work around those headwinds, or it's going to be a challenge in the next year or two.
We often talk about millennials. I know we've kind of in this conversation before mentioned millennials too. At what point do millennials become a big factor in wealth management in the work that you do?
I think they already are becoming a big factor. And as you look at there's going to be in the next 10 years the biggest transfer of wealth in this country's ever seen. And those, once again, are the small businesses that are passing the business on to the next generation. And those are the millennials. And I think we're going to see the millennials continue to impact the markets. And they have a different way of thinking in terms of technology and in terms of investing. And I think that's going to be a challenge for us to address.
Specifically how? I mean, millennials like to use the new tech, whether it's the artificial intelligence or one of these other apps or something like that. Is it that? I know because we talked about, too, the importance of the personal touch.
It is. And banks are spending millions and millions of dollars to address the tech issue and to serve the millennials. And it's things like internet banking, which now seems, you know, very traditional, but mobile banking is the big next frontier, and all the banks are spending millions of dollars in keeping their mobile banking platform refreshed and keep it growing. And you've got to serve the millennials. They're not coming into the branches like before, and they have different ideas in terms of payments, in terms of bill payments, in terms of how they do their banking. And especially on the wealth management side, I know the millennials are looking at different things, you know, to manage their wealth. And we have to keep changing to be able to service that market.
I was taken by one of these articles talking about the wealth. And we were talking earlier about the sources of the wealth. Marijuana, the legalization of marijuana from Canada and in states in the United States where it's become legal, that's created a bunch of new millionaires. And that's going to be the trend moving
absolutely.
Forward.
Absolutely. And especially in Canada, I know the market is very frothy right now with the marijuana companies. And the same with California and Colorado. And as I know, that business continues to be legalized in other states. It's going to do nothing but grow, and it creates opportunities and challenges for the banks. Right now, the banks aren't really allowed on a federal level to be involved in those kind of businesses, and so these companies are trying to find ways to get financing to be able to do their daily banking. And I know Colorado was looking at the S&L sector to service that business, and There's been a lot of talk around that, but nothing's really been solved right now on that front.
Is that going to have to be a solution that comes from the federal government?
Probably at some time.
Yeah.
I know Canada has also been very aggressive in the Bitcoin business, and I know that's created a lot of wealth and a lot of volatility in the market and a lot of concern about how regulated that business is.
I wanted to, if we could, review the year, because this is the last time I think we'll talk to you for the year. What has stood out from the last year as impacting you and the work that you do every day? Events, people, things, issues?
Well, the market has certainly, I think, especially in the last half of this year, has introduced a new level of volatility that we probably weren't expecting. A lot of it has to do with the headwinds I mentioned. You know, the trade wars is a big deal. And I just read in the papers yesterday that the president might sit down with the president of Japan this weekend, or China, excuse me, and talk about what they can do on the trade wars. And I think he might be softening a little bit given the recent General Motors closures and cutbacks they're facing. And I think that, you know, once again, the Brexit thing leaves a lot of people, you don't know what's really going to happen, and that's creating the volatility. But we've had a strong market so far this year. We've given back most of our gains. For example, last year, I think the S&P 500 was around 9.5%. This year, we had swings, and I think we've given back most of our returns this year. I think year-to-date, we're sitting at 3% right now, maybe just a little under that at 2.8%. But I think that, you know, hopefully we can smooth out the volatility for next year, and hopefully the headwinds won't be as strong.
Do you have a prediction, any predictions for next year?
I don't make predictions, but I hope we can, certainly we continue to diversify and manage people's portfolios. And in our financial planning process, we have to take that into account and, you know, risk adjust our portfolio.
Doug, this is a great conversation as always. How can people reach out to you to do this one-on-one?
Well, we certainly have a strong wealth group here in Chicago, and we invite anyone to have a conversation with us around the asset management, investment management, and more importantly, the financial planning is a good start.
Email where they can get a hold of you? Or
absolutely. It's doug.myers@associatedbank.com.
Doug, it's good chatting with you. Have a good holiday.
Thank you, Steve. Good to see you. Thank you.
Doug Myers, the Senior Vice President and the Chicago Private Client Market Leader at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the WGN Opening Bell page, and also follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter, and head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership for more on our thought leaders and more conversations there as well.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell. New research shows that most men and women say most advertising does not reflect the world around them. Some stunning numbers from this research this morning. We're happy to have with us this morning Lindsay Franke, who's head of creative excellence at Ipsos, the global market research and consulting firm. Lindsay, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me here.
I was struck by the high percentage here of both men and women. Give us a sense of what this research found and why these numbers might be so significant.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it definitely is interesting to see that, you know, about 7 in 10 men and women both feel that advertising isn't reflecting the world around them. And I think, you know, while we see that marketers have made improvements in this, it really creates a challenge for agencies to develop advertising that is relevant and speaks to consumers. I think one of the important things with these kind of stunning numbers that, you know, a majority of consumers feel that advertising isn't relevant. We know that the significant investments that companies are making, in order to have a strong ROI, you really have to resonate with the consumer. So we see that there's, you know, vast room to grow here. And particularly one of the interesting things we found that's really driving that is, you know, about 2/3 of both men and women say that there's a need to kind of cut these old-fashioned gender roles and that they're not reflecting today's reality. And I think a big part of that is driven by, you know, there's a increase with dual income families, and we're seeing that a lot of the, you know, traditional roles that have been reflected in advertising are not evolving at the pace in which the, you know, American family is today.
Lindsay, is that why when I see, and there's one commercial, there's actually a couple of commercials, but the one that sticks out in our conversation to me this morning, I think is a commercial for a laundry detergent where it features the father who's at home taking care of his daughter and doing laundry. And that one always, when I see it, strikes me as something different from the other ads I'm seeing. Is that sort of a symptom of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, what you're talking about is the Tide Princess Dress ad, and Tide's done several ads where they really look to reflect the roles that both mom and dad are playing with the family, and I think they've done a nice job making some progression in terms of what is reflective of today's lifestyle for consumers. And we see that, you know, certainly advertisers are making a stride to do more and more of that, and that's one that has done a great job delivering, you know, against that. I think that a challenge is to find that balance of what role mom and dad play at home and make sure, you know, that advertisement has done a great job of doing it in a balanced way, but making sure that as other advertisers explore this, that it's not being done in a way that's condescending to dad, because dad is playing a very integral role at home. And so making sure that it's done in more of a hero light is certainly important.
This is very important for a lot of different reasons. I'm struck too by the research respondents talking about how advertising influences how women and especially girls see themselves. The numbers here are in the 80% area. So this is a big deal. If you have advertising off the rails, this could have a long-lasting effect on the population.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, both men and women feel strongly that advertising influences both the view of how women and girls see themselves, and particularly females. You know, 80% feel that advertising will influence how women and younger girls view themselves. And I think this highlights the responsibility of the advertising industry and the influence that it has on society. And so, you know, we've seen some great campaigns from, you know, P&G's campaign, Like a Girl, to really help break down some of those gender stereotypes and empower, you know, future leaders and future women, and also some of the things we've seen, you know, in the past with Pantene's campaign with labels against women to really help break down this barrier of how we're influencing society and that positive view of women. But it's certainly a big responsibility for advertisers to influence society, and it's something that consumers really are looking for companies to help create a positive impact on young girls and women and really change the shape of the view.
What does the research show about how this is impacting the bottom line at some of the companies doing the advertising? Has there been an erosion of support for companies that are not advertising the way people feel like they should be advertising?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that we see when we're looking at the ROI on a lot of creative and the impact that we're seeing across companies is consumers are demanding more and more of companies to take a stance, particularly from different causes, and advertisers who are not doing this. We are seeing some backlash on this. We also are seeing the companies that have done a good job at pivoting and really making some strides in you know, the new American family and positive messages towards consumers and taking a stance even on some cause marketing, be it economic, political, that they are having some positive reactions to this. You know, we see that this is becoming a new phenomenon where consumers are demanding advertisers to take a stance on some of these different areas. And the advertisers, what it really boils down to is the companies and advertisers who do a good job at creating authentic and relatable advertising that taps into that true human truth that consumers can relate to have the greatest ROI and impact on their business.
So, Lindsay, what is what's going to happen here? Is there some organization or some overriding advertising parent group that's giving direction to advertisers about how to move forward and kind of fix some of these problems?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, lots of different groups out there that are, you know, creating a push. You know, we look at, you know, for the world that I'm in, we work a lot with the ARF and looking to see what are some of the things that are really important to consumers to help advise advertisers and what they should be doing. There's some guidelines that have been published in terms of what are new ways to really help portray in advertising what is being demanded by consumers. And I think that, you know, as we move into the future, that there is going to be more conglomerations of agencies working together to understand how to really combat some of the challenges that consumers are demanding, particularly with the evolution of the media environment, where there's just a greater demand even for personalization and making sure that the messaging is relevant to each individual consumer. And it's such a more challenging environment than just a single mass TV campaign because of the, you know, social environment in which brands and advertisers have to play.
Anything else from this research that jumps out at you that should be highlighted?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the other things that's really interesting to me is that we do see a lot, you know, 62% say that advertising sets unrealistic expectations and puts pressure on women. And we don't see that same level. Only 35% feel that advertising sets unrealistic expectations and pressure on men. And so I think that this is something that's really important for advertisers and brands to think about as they develop campaigns going into next year, is how to balance that pressure and unrealistic expectations that are being put on women in advertising to, you know, like we talked about earlier, really influence society in a positive way.
Lindsay, we appreciate you being with us this morning. This is good information, and it's always good talking with you.
All right, great. Thanks. Have a good day.
Lindsay Franke, head of creative excellence at Ipsos, the global research and marketing firm. We're going to link out to the research we talked about this morning with the podcast of The Opening Bell. We'll send that out on social media as well this morning here at WGN and WGNradio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing this morning toward opening losses on Wall Street at the open, with futures on the Dow down more than a third, on the S&P nearly a half a percent, and on the NASDAQ, nearly three quarters of a percent. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. All of the trader eyes are focused on Buenos Aires, Argentina this week, waiting for the meeting between President Xi Jinping of China and President Trump of the United States. As a result, soybean futures rose yesterday on short covering, as investors waited to see if expected talks between Washington and Beijing at the G20 summit meeting will defuse a trade dispute that has choked U.S. soybean exports to China. Board of Trade, January soybeans settled up 15 cents at $8.90 a bushel. The March corn contract up 4 3/4 at 373 1/4 a bushel. March soft red winter wheat rose a nickel, ending at 511 1/2 a bushel. And in livestock futures trade at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, lean hog futures ended at $64.50 a hundredweight. December live cattle at 116.77. and January feeder cattle at 147.70. Perhaps even bigger news than Argentina's meeting yesterday, though, is the fact that lawmakers are very close to reaching a consensus in days on the farm bill. That from two senior senators yesterday. Senator Pat Roberts, chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, said, "We have finally reached a point where I think we're very close and very encouraged." Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow from Michigan said at the same briefing that she was very encouraged by the progress being made this week. Maybe we'll have a farm bill by the end of the week. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. MillerCoors and Pabst Brewing Company have settled a lawsuit in which the hipster's brand of choice claimed Bicker Brewer lied about its ability to continue brewing Pabst beers to put that company out of business. The settlement came yesterday As jurors were in deliberation, Chicago-based Miller Coors said in a statement the settlement was amicable and that all outstanding issues with Pabst have been resolved. Settlement details not disclosed. Miller Coors has brewed and shipped most of Pabst beers since 1999. Pabst, which was founded in Milwaukee but now is based in Los Angeles, sued in 2016 after Miller Coors announced it would not have the capability or capacity to brew for Pabst when the contract expired in 2020. Pabst claimed that the contract allowed for two five-year extensions. If Pabst wanted that and Miller Coors was worried, Pabst would cut into its market share. Miller Coors called that claim a conspiracy theory. Dick's Sporting Goods is posting a drop in sales over the last quarter after it tightened its gun sales rules at its stores following the Parkland, Florida school shooting. Revenue was down 4.5% to around $1.9 billion. The chain raised the age to buy a gun to 21 and stopped selling assault rifles after a gun killed 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School back in February. The store is still mulling whether to expand a ban on virtually all hunting supplies after a trial at 10 stores where those supplies already were not selling well. Those supplies include crossbows and rifle scopes. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, November the 29th. Personal income and spending for October leads off today's economic reports. Analysts expect to see both income and spending increasing 0.4%. Also today, a look at first-time unemployment benefits, jobless claims. Economists are forecasting 220,000 new claims, 4,000 fewer than last week. The pending home sales index for October is set for release today as well. Housing industry analysts predict no change from September. Also on the list today, the EIA natural gas report, FOMC minutes will be out today. Also a report on farm prices and a couple of Fed speakers out there, including Chicago Fed President Charles Evans and Loretta Mester. On the earnings calendar, Abercrombie & Fitch, Dollar Tree, and Express release before the open, GameStop, and HP after the close. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, November the 29th.